Hello, folks, and welcome to another episode of On My Mind. I'm Shelley Griffith, and today I'm extremely delighted to have a young lady with us who's going to share a number of wonderful things about her life and career and things that she's doing as a community servant, and that's Liv Cook. Welcome to the program, Liv.
Thanks. I'm glad to be here.
We're tickled to have you, and let's start out, as I do with my guests, give us some background, where you were born and raised, family and things like that, and we'll get into some other things in a minute.
Okay. Yeah, so I am originally from the Knoxville area, and I'm the daughter of, my mom was a stay-at-home mom and my dad was in the military, and so I lived there until about 12. There was had a turbulent upbringing, so for various reasons I was transient for quite a few years. In my like 6th through 8th grade year I was unhoused, so lots of moving around. But then we settled here in Athens in 2012, and I've stayed in McMinn County ever since.
Tell us a little now on your education. Did you go to high school?
I did, yeah. So I graduated from McMinn in 2016, and then I went to Wesleyan and graduated from there in 2020.
And Wesleyan, I guess during that transition, it became a university while you were there? Okay.
Yeah.
And as folks know, of course, I'm an old Tennessee Wesleyan College grad. Still hard for me to call it university, but I thought you had done that in that transition. Now, tell the folks what you majored in and how you arrived at career choice.
Yeah, so I majored in special education and with an emphasis in kindergarten through 8th grade. And I knew that I wanted to be a special ed teacher probably my junior year of high school, but I think the wheels were turning even before that. So I have a lot of autistic people in my family, a lot of folks with disabilities, and so that was just my life growing up. And then when I was in middle school, I got to this really great opportunity to be a peer mentor in the CDC self-contained classroom, and I just loved it. I got to hang out with kids that I didn't normally get to hang out with, and it wasn't like in a sense of, I didn't approach it as, I know these things and you don't, or I'm helping you in some way. It was really just a good sense of community. And so I got to help with things like Special Olympics and just build these really wonderful friendships. And then I did the same thing in high school. So every year in high school, I always had a dedicated period where I was in the CDC classroom. And so sometimes I would help with like their work assignments, but a lot of times it was just playing Uno and having a good time, lots of laughing and dancing. And so my junior year, I decided I wanted to be a special ed teacher. And that's what I went to Wesleyan for. And along the way, I tagged on a religion and philosophy minor. But I just so deeply loved it. I loved the kids that I got to work with when I was in college. And when I started teaching afterward, it was just, I don't know, it was really beautiful.
Liv, do you know, and I meant to look it up and apologize, but do we know how many folks around the state maybe or the country become special ed teachers? Small percentage, I assume?
Yeah, so I don't know the exact numbers, but I know in Tennessee there is a major gap in special ed openings, and you're seeing that there's a lot of legislation like incentivizing folks to become special ed teachers. Mm-hmm. It's easier pathways to pay for part of this master's program so you can become a special ed teacher, or you'll even see sometimes some folks that are teaching in special ed classrooms, they may not be licensed to teach there, mm-hmm. but there's like some leniency. It's a tough field, and it's not tough because of the kids. I never say that the kids are giving me a hard time. They're having a hard time because I don't think our world in general is built with disabled people in mind, much less our public school system. And so when you become a special ed teacher, you're really trying to fill some gaps that are so systemic. And on top of all the paperwork and teaching these babies to read and wash their hands. And so it's really tough to stay in it. So that's a long-winded answer to say, I don't know how many become special ed teachers, but I know that there's a very high turnover in the field.
And I thought that, and as the listeners know, my wife had taught second grade, and she had a number of situations working with the special ed teachers. And it's very tough, and I think the folks realize that. And you've got a job here in the Athens city system then when you finished up at Wesleyan?
I did, yeah. So my first year, I was actually in Loudoun County. I taught at Philadelphia Elementary. And so my first year, I taught kindergarten through 8th grade. And so that was wild. I'd have 15-year-olds in the morning and then a 5-year-old in the afternoon. And my time there was largely, I was a traditional resource teacher. So kiddos would come to me for 45 minutes and we would work on reading and math skills. And then I had a couple of students who had some pretty challenging behaviors. And so I did some social emotional behavior work. And a job opened up at Westside Elementary at the end of my first year, and that was closer to home. So I applied and I worked for Athens City Schools the last 2 years. And I taught third through fifth grade, but it was the whole breadth of special ed. Yeah. So the job description was a resource teacher, and that was not exactly what I was doing. So I did the traditional pull kids out, work on reading and math during their intervention block. But I also worked with students who were autistic and couldn't speak the way that you and I communicate. I had students that we were changing diapers, and I also worked with students who had extremely challenging behaviors, hitting, choking, throwing chairs. So I worked as the special ed teacher, but I also served on the crisis intervention team. And those last 2 years were really tough. I think at one point my caseload, by the time I left, was getting close to 50. And I was the only teacher the only special ed teacher in the school building.
Oh, my.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, as folks who've never been in the classroom setting, especially what you're describing with that many youngsters, this is overwhelming, folks, extremely stressful for any teacher to go through. And your religion courses at Wesleyan led you to, I don't want to call it a side gig, but we've been blessed to have Liv at our church, St. Paul's Episcopal, and tell the folks what you're doing with us.
Yeah, so I am the children's and youth minister here at St. Paul's. That I did not intend on doing that, but I've really loved it. So I started studying religion on accident at Wesleyan. I grew up spiritually mixed, I guess. they're confused. I don't know. So I had some Methodist upbringing, but my faith was largely formed by the Southern Baptist tradition. So going to church with my grandma, the preacher hollering, in a lot of ways formed my faith in really good ways, and in a lot of ways was really harmful. And by the time I got to college, it was mandated that we had to take at least 2 religion classes at Wesleyan. And I got to take my first intro to Bible class with Rev McDonald. And that just opened up my whole world, because growing up, I was taught that you couldn't question the Bible. That was bad. My faith was struggling if I was doing that. And I remember he said something. He said, "I take the Bible too seriously to take it literally." And that just opened, that blew my mind. And so I wanted to take every class that he offered. And then I took an ethics class and wound up with a religion and philosophy minor, and wound up at St. Paul's in 2018 just as a parishioner and got baptized here. And then in 2020, pandemic happened and there was a lot of transition, and there was an opening here for a children's and youth minister. And so Father Bunting had approached me about it and interviewed with some folks from the vestry, and I've been here ever since, and it's been such a joy. I've loved it.
And we've had such a delight having you in that position, and I know that all of the youth thoroughly enjoy it, and it's wonderful that you can do that, and certainly, as you call him, Rev McDonald, was just an outstanding professor.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of good base knowledge, and the wisdom of a statement like that is wonderful. And then you're also, and we're going to segue into your current position in a minute, but you also, I think, are a member of what we call here, folks, the EFM class, Education for Ministry, which is not, don't want people to be confused, is not to become a minister or a priest, but a wonderful in-depth course, 36 weeks a year, probably like a regular mm-hmm. school year. And I was fortunate to take 3 years of that. And describe for them what you have learned and discerned in your time in EFM.
Yeah, so I joined EFM, one, because I really deeply loved that time that I had in college of exploring those faith questions and digging deeper. And so I heard about EFM, and I had just taken this position as children's and youth minister. And I was really worried about making sure I was teaching kids good. I think my goal is that the minimal that they have to unlearn from me is really important. And so I wanted to take this course to be better knowledgeable for them. And so I got involved. I'm in my third year now. The first year focuses on Old Testament, second year is New Testament, and third year is church history. And I thought I was just joining a Bible study class, kind of, and it's not that at all. It's been this like group of community that I look forward to every week, exploring just not only just the questions from our textbook, but really exploring questions about who we are as people, how we come together in community, and how our faith blends into all of that. And it's such a diverse group of folks who have come to St. Paul's in so many different pathways, but we're all having this conversation and struggling with the divine. And that's just a really beautiful human moment every week. I think it's made me a better person, a better children's minister. And I think it strengthened my faith a lot.
And I agree. When my wife and I took it, outstanding. Old Testament, New Testament, things you didn't know. The one big thing, and Liv may have alluded with Dr. McDonald, you can't take everything literally in the Bible, and it taught us so much, and especially about writings from so many people that were different in time slots, where you might think this was written in such and such, and then realize, no, it really occurred afterwards, and the Bible itself being in chronological order, and then discovering it really isn't by the time you do that. Of course, third year, if you're using the same book we do, the monster book, called it, 1,000 pages of the history of Christianity in general. Wonderful, though. And the videos, do you look at the videos from that book yet or not?
Yeah, I've watched the first episode. I watched it with my husband, Nathan, and he's going to school. He's to be a history teacher. And I was like, oh, great, we can watch this together. He likes history. And he's like, if that book is as dense as this documentary is, I understand why you're reading so much every week.
Oh, my God.
But, yeah, I've watched the first couple episodes.
They really helped us to focus more on what was going on. But it's great. And for me, being the non-historian, my wife was a history major and taught that for a number of years before elementary. And so she grasped all that stuff and loved it. And I was just slogging through. I need something booms. But it's a wonderful course. And the fourth year branches out, as you know, into to more, I think, possibly more practical stuff. But I'm glad you're doing that. And then as you look now, gave up the teaching, you have now gotten involved with an organization that fascinates me in knowing what you're doing. And please share with the folks how you made that transition and what's going on now with what you do.
Yeah. So when I was teaching, Tennessee legislature proposed this law. They like to call it a literacy law. That's not what it is. it's more colloquially known as the third grade retention law. And so this law basically says that if a child who is in third grade gets to the end of third grade and they take their TCAP, which is our big end of the year state mandated standardized test, if a child on that one test does not score proficient on the reading portion, then they now have to jump through all these hoops to avoid getting retained. And there's those hoops look like summer programming or after school tutoring, or there's lots of things that are in the weeds of that law, but it's really just rooted in this one size fits all model and really punitive. I don't know, it's just punitive. And I was really mad about that. And in McMinn County a couple years ago, we had a book ban that I was really mad about that happened when our school board banned the book Mouse against their own policy. And so I was so deeply frustrated. I didn't know a lot of avenues to get involved, as teachers were often discouraged from speaking. We live in an area that doesn't have a super strong union presence in our schools. So I didn't know what to do. And then I met Austin Sauerbry, who's the executive director of SOCEM, Statewide Organizing for Community Empowerment. And he had these tools to start getting people together and start talking about these issues out loud. So I got involved with SOCEM through the book ban issue and then this third grade retention issue. I brought it up at a meeting that we were at together. And we were like, yeah, we can start a letter writing campaign about this. And we can start getting folks talking about this and getting school boards to pass resolutions against it. As a teacher volunteer, I joined SOCEM. I started helping get the roots in McMinn County to start approaching our school board about this issue. And I got involved as a volunteer on the statewide level around it. And this public education work just kicked off across the state. SOCEM decided that this needed to be a statewide issue. And I was serving on the board at that time. And it was kicking off so much. We had all these thousands of people from across the state that were upset about this law and wanting to get active around it. And Sachem joined this coalition called Tennessee for All, which is an organization, or it's a coalition of a bunch of groups. And there's three pillars: good public education, corporate accountability, and good union jobs. And some money was found to get a position opened for someone to run the public education work. And I was getting frustrated with where I was teaching. I felt like I was having to participate in a lot of injustices that I didn't feel were right. And I just took a chance and applied for that job about a year ago. Actually, it's been almost exactly a year ago now. And so now my position is I'm the coordinator for our Public School Strong campaign with Sachem. And Sachem is a 50-year-old organization rooted in, our history is rooted in the Appalachian coal fields. And it has offered me so much the last couple years of how change happens. And it happens by talking to our neighbors and getting one more voice singing with the choir at a time and giving people the tools they need, not for me to advocate for them, but for them to learn how to advocate for themselves and talk to their neighbors to make good change. That's a philosophical high view, but that's what I do now is I coordinate folks to organize in their communities around public education issues. And we start with teaching people how to go to their school boards. And then there's lots of other trainings and things that we offer, but really just getting folks to take their power back.
And I think that's very well said, Liv. And for those listeners who were not aware, this book banning was an older book, sort of a graphic novel, if you will, that was objected to by the McMahon County School Board. And I have dear friends on that board, and we talked and did all that. But what Liv is saying is that they banned the book and sadly did not read it. And then this became an international story, literally. The author of the book was interviewed on the platform, Facebook, YouTube, whatever, but it was visual. And basically realizing that the book banning that's going on across America now, I have actually, for those of you who listen to the program regularly, I've had a podcast on book banning and what's going on there nationally and in our own state. And as Liv's alluding to, this became a big deal and should have been a big deal. And those of us who stood up against banning books, especially for the reasons they stated, just blew us all away. And I'm just tickled, Liv, that you're in a role now, certainly with educating people how to approach school boards. And then this law, this third grade retention law, just completely blows me away in the sense that I just can't fathom. Because as you and I both know, one test, one day, whatever the child's going through, and to be punished in that way makes zero sense to those of us on this side. We can talk politics about it all day long. It's just a terrible law. I don't care who voted for it. At this point, I'm proud of those efforts. And take us through now, when you go to Capitol Hill in Nashville and you're putting this together in your role as a coordinator, take us through those steps as to how you approach the people and the boards and how you give them the education, like in person. We have flyers, we have YouTube videos. Share with our folks how you begin to get them ready.
So I also want to acknowledge too that so public education, the reason why public education is a great thing to organize around is that it is like one of the last like public common goods that everyone is impacted by. So no matter your race, gender, class, language, ability, background, public education is something that affects you. And it is this common good social service that we continue to fund and hold in high regard in most of our communities. What we're seeing happening in Tennessee, and I think this is a trend in many areas of the country, is this movement to privatize such a sacred institution. And there's lots of different ways to privatize a school. You have this school voucher fight that we're fighting in Tennessee. You've got, through the third grade retention law, that's a form of privatization because it's standardized testing. And we saw that when that law was passed, so was the contract with Pearson Testing Company by millions and millions of dollars. We're seeing undermining of teachers. We're seeing targeting of communities, especially Black and Brown and LGBTQ communities, and a lot of these book bans and things happening. So it's a very concerted effort. I don't mean to sound like a conspiracy theorist. It's, it just is what it is. And that's the way that it's been since the Reconstruction period. After the Civil War, you had freed Black communities that were starting public schools and doing this amazing liberatory work. And then you had the Lost Cause movement that came in and started disenfranchising folks even further. And anyway, so public education's always been the battleground for democracy. So when we're talking about these issues, I think highlighting that race, class, gender framework is really important when we're talking to people, whether it's our neighbors or legislators. And so our theory of change at SOCM is that social change begins with conversations. So I'm not always heading to Nashville to talk to legislators first. I'm going to talk to my neighbor. I'm going to see what my neighbor thinks about it. And I'm going to see, and around here in a rural area, people are really divided and they're buying into some of this stuff that's hateful about our neighbors or hateful about our teachers. But if we can share our stories and find some common ground, suddenly we're not so divided anymore and we're opening those doors for solutions. And so what we do is through social media, through these conversations with neighbors, we offer these monthly trainings where we invite people in to learn about the history of these attacks on public education. And then we break it down real simple. This is how you attend a school board meeting. This is how you find the website. This is the weird language that they're going to be using. This is what Robert's Rules of Order means. We really break it down and we send you a t-shirt. And then you should go up to your school board meeting in a t-shirt that says, I'm public school strong. And now you're sitting with your neighbors that are also in those matching t-shirts. And school boards have been really divisive. I think we've seen this a lot with extremist movements, with Moms for Liberty, Americans for Prosperity, those kind of really well-funded right-wing groups. They're dominating the conversation, but they don't represent the majority of Tennesseans. And so what we're trying to do is we're trying to get a movement of regular grassroots folks that are showing up to their school board meetings and saying, actually, we love our schools. We know that they can improve, but let's find those solutions together and not blame marginalized groups for that. Sorry, I felt like I got off track a little bit there. But, and so when we go to Capitol Hill and we're bringing regular people to Capitol Hill, not these paid lobbyists, we're bringing regular folks to share their stories. We're not always met with the most empathetic legislators, but I think what folks are seeing through this process is that even when I can't always rely on my legislator, I'm learning to rely on my neighbor and we can make change that way. So that's the overview of what we do. And we will be going to the Capitol later in March, but that'll be mostly just to show people power. Yeah.
That's an excellent description and a way to do that. I need a t-shirt.
Okay.
Public school strong. Okay. I tell you, and like I say, not just because I was married to a teacher for all those years, not because I'm still the team doc for Athens City Schools, but because of the belief that I share as your neighbor that this is something that has to be done. And knowing from the healthcare standpoint, same thing. Mm-hmm. We're just off the mark so many days with what healthcare legislation brings about. And I feel your pain there trying to get some legislators to just look at us and say, oh, really, that makes good sense. Mm-hmm. And so when you do that, and then as you build up that grassroots support and the response, and what Liv and I talked about briefly before we started the program, if it's a, especially the school voucher scenario, if I can afford to send my child to a private school and wish to do so, there's no argument, folks. SOCM is not against that, and I don't think ever would be. It's just we don't need public dollars, tax dollars and things going to a private system, mm-hmm. when, as she points out beautifully, public education for the common good. So, yeah, I think I'm right there with you. Very well said. Now, as you look down the line, are you all getting some other inklings of things that the legislature in Tennessee is looking at besides these two major educational issues? Are you getting some feeling that some other stuff's going to pop up this year, maybe? Or
there's always something popping up, it feels like. Yeah, there is some good legislation that's on the table, and there's also a lot of bad. And a lot of that bad legislation that we're seeing is rooted in privatization and rooted in fear. So back in November, our House Speaker, Cameron Sexton, thought it'd be a great idea to put together this committee to see whether our schools even need federal funding. And so federal funding makes up over $1 billion of Tennessee's school funding. And he was highlighting that we can do things the Tennessee way. We can fund it and we don't have to be beholden to these federal strings. And those federal strings he was talking about were civil protections for children with disabilities, for Black and brown children, for children who don't speak English as their first language. All these groups that have been systemically oppressed, that's who that targets when we get rid of federal funding. So that took a lot of air to navigate. And thankfully, I think that has died for now. Some other legislation that's popped up is right now, I think Representative Bolso is trying to push some legislation that gives parents or parents of children in public schools or children who are eligible for public schools to now sue a school system if they have books that violate that parents' beliefs or the certain set of rules that Tennessee has passed for what can be in a library. And we're also, the third grade retention fight is always a fight. They're wanting to expand that to fifth grade math and this universal voucher issue. So there's a lot of rough stuff on the horizon. And there's also some good legislation on the table. There's some legislators that are proposing funding universal preschool, but by closing corporate tax loopholes. So if we have this, close those loopholes on corporations, because 60% of corporations don't pay taxes in Tennessee. But if they paid their share, we could have things like universal pre-K, which would benefit our kiddos. Mm-hmm. So we're going to take our hope with all the bad. And I think this legislative session has been such a defensive fight, especially with vouchers on the table, that it's hard to think further ahead.
Oh, my. Mm-hmm. How live, and I've asked other folks the same, and I think about it all the time. How do we get people in state legislatures, in the National Congress, talking to each other in a civil tone anymore, sitting down, as one of my guests that I mentioned to you said, the old days, and I realize we're not there, folks, currently, but how do we get them to just sit down across the table, like you and I are talking, have a respectful disagreement, and then get some stuff done? What are we on both sides of the aisle doing something wrong? What do you think's going on?
Oh, I ask myself that question a lot, and I'll be honest, me personally, I don't have a ton of faith right now in my legislature, but what I do have faith in is my community. Mm-hmm. Living in McMinn County, I think a lot of the small town South or rural South gets pegged as a bunch of right-wing hillbillies. That's the conversation, is we're the ones banning books, we're the ones doing all that. And in a lot of ways, I think we've earned a little bit of that. However, we're also a community that is largely impoverished. We're a community of people who survive. And also, there's a lot of really great folks in our community. I'm thinking just in the last month here in Athens, Tennessee, we had a beautiful program at the Art Center called Hot Comb Honey by mm-hmm. Cynthia McCowan. And it was this gorgeous conversation where Black folks were sharing their story about their hair and how they have been oppressed. And us white folks had to listen, and we had to have a conversation with each other about the ways that we've been complicit in that and the ways that we move forward. And that was here in Athens. Here in Athens, we also had a Civic Saturday event led by parents and neighbors standing up against vouchers, and it included a school board member. We've had people showing up to their city council meetings and their school board meetings, speaking out against vouchers, and that's happening here. So I don't know how to get the legislators to relinquish some of that power and greed that they're holding on to that's preventing them from talking to each other. But what I do believe in is that I can go door knock in some neighborhoods here in Athens, and I can talk to people about how much they love their public schools. I can tell them that their voice matters because I'm listening to them and their story. And I have to have hope that they're going to take that to the polls. I have to have hope that we're going to build our people power so much that it's not going to matter who's in office, because they're going to be accountable to us and people are going to recognize that. I think that's the gift of community organizing, is that we don't have to wait on legislators to do the work because we can do it together. So that's where I'm finding my hope, because sometimes talking to representatives, it's really difficult. It's really difficult to have hope, but I've got hope in my neighbors.
Good. And I'm with you. I think hope that one-on-one and what you're doing makes so much sense. And I'm an old advocate, and I quote a lot of stuff over the years. People look at me like, will you please be quiet? But the one I use and have used many times is, of course, from Margaret Mead, that never doubt that a small group of committed people mm-hmm. can change the world, because it's really the only thing that ever has.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a little paraphrasing, but basically what you're saying is one-on-one, the hope that you have, and very well said. I think that's a key, that just sitting and talking. I have discovered through my long time, 47 years back in Athens after college, you're right. My friends and I may not always agree on point A and B, but if we just take a breath and talk to each other and I listen enough and they listen enough, you're right. You can say, oh, I didn't realize that.
Mm-hmm.
And thank you for bringing that to me. Yeah. Now, Liv, as we begin to wrap up, and I do want to get you back later on a program as we move through some of these Nashville state legislature bills, but if I come to you as a young person, say in college, sophomore in college, and I'm looking at a career in various things, how will you describe to them about becoming a community servant as a part of what they're looking at? Doesn't matter what their degree is. That can be going into medicine, education, religion. How do you describe to that young person what you would like for them to see in the way of a big picture?
Wow. I think finding like-minded folks is a good first step, whether that's within your union. I'm going to tell every young person going into career, find your union. I think whether it's your church, whether it's community groups like SOCM, find people. I can't remember who said it, but anything worthwhile. I think it may have been Miriam Kaba that said this. She's an abolitionist organizer. Anything worthwhile doing, you cannot do alone. So as much as you, I know in college, there was a lot of things I wanted to scream and holler about. And my one voice did not make a whole lot of change. But when I started talking to my neighbors and finding groups, we started making some change and making some waves. So I think just find community, whether that is within your workspace, whether you're looking for that outside of your workspace, you've got to find other people that are willing to do this work with you. And it's okay to make mistakes, and you're not going to know. A lot of being a community organizer is a lot of strategy and thinking about campaigns, but those mistakes are, if we're leaning towards justice and leaning towards a more loving world, it's worth trying and worth doing. And there's going to be a lot of things that are going to make you think that it's not worth doing. There's going to be a lot of reasons to not have hope that things can change. But Miriam Kaba, and I say this all the time, hope is a discipline. I have to choose every day to have hope, even if I'm not optimistic. I have to have this faith and this vision and this dream that I'm working to achieve. And I think when we're thinking about how we vision and how we dream, we've got to let go of those constraints of oppression and power and money. And we've got to build a world. If it's broken, let's build something new. So I would just tell a young person, find your people and get really rooted in what you want for the world, not just what you're screaming against, because that's what's going to keep you in the work. You're going to burn yourself out if you don't have that vision.
It's just beautiful advice. Thank you so much. That needs to be on YouTube. It needs to be on a shirt, a sweatshirt, or whatever. That's beautiful. But that is great. Now, if we have some of our listeners, and I hope we do, that would like to become a part of SOCM, is there something they can contact, emails and numbers?
Yeah, so SOCM, so we are a multi-issue organization. So we don't just work on public education. We are member-driven and we have a chapter structure. And so when you get together with folks in your county, you all decide the issues that matter to you. And SOCM, as long as it's within SOCM's values, we work to support and build those skills so that you can build successful campaigns. So right now, our three biggest pillars of work is public education, environmental justice, and housing justice. If you are interested in becoming a member of SOCM, you can go to SOCM.org. It's SOCM.org. And there are tabs there to learn more about our work and how to join. Right now, our cost to join is only $20 a year. But because we're a grassroots organization, I really encourage folks to have recurring monthly donations if you have capacity for that, because that supports this good work that's happening across the state. You can also, if you're interested in public ed work, feel free to email me, livliv@socm.org, and I'd be glad to send you information on how to join this Public School Strong movement. I think we've got activity in 15 counties right now, and we're wanting to hit all 95. Would love to chat.
That's awesome. That is outstanding, folks. That is something that I definitely would encourage you to try to do. These folks are doing outstanding work. Always exciting for me to see young people taking on these efforts. That's what change is all about, and that's how we'll get there. Liv, it's been a delight to have you. And just if you have anything else, just add to it, or just tickled that you were with me today.
Oh, I'm so glad to be here. No, I think that this was a great conversation, and yeah, just thanks for having me. Thanks for talking to all of our neighbors all the time. You're a good example of that.
Appreciate it very much. And folks, as I say to each and every one of you, please have a safe and healthy day, and I'll see you a little further up the road.